The reading from the Second Testament is continuing through the Beatitudes, one of Jesus' sermons that he gave to a large crowd. And today we are looking at verse number 6 in chapter 5, which says, "Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be satisfied." The word of the Lord. In February, this church sent me to Kenya to meet our mission partners there and to learn about their lives and the mission projects that we've been working on. While I was there, a friend of mine sent me a video of one of her pastors who just happened to also be in Kenya at the same time. He had made a short video about a God moment that he had in the country. In the video, he explains that in his morning reading from Scripture was God telling the Israelites not to worry about where their food would come from, that God would provide manna for them to eat. As he read the passage, he sensed God asking him to trust that God would provide food for that day. So he decided to not worry about buying food. He would wait for God to provide. As the video goes on and his day progresses, he gets hungrier and hungrier until he is slumped over on a bench, hungry and exhausted. As he sits there, he recounts that someone came up to him, offered him a bag of chips. God had provided. Now, I understand what this person's intentions were, but the white privilege of this video hit me very hard, especially since I was in the same context that he was doing this food experiment in. The first issue is the audacity that he would think one day would teach him anything about depending on God for food. Instead of testing God, he could have simply asked someone as he visited in Kenya that could tell their story about what it was like to trust God to provide food for them. The second issue, and actually the minute he said that he was going to try to go hungry in Kenya, I literally laughed out loud because I have never been fed so much in my life. Kenyans take hospitality very seriously. If you are white and in Kenya, it's obvious that you're a visitor and in need of hospitality. Every single place we went to, we were given a bottle of water and at least a piece of fruit. Most places had prepared a celebratory feast of meat and veggies and fruit and rice and dessert. And when I say every place, I mean every place. If we were in one house and then went next door to the next house, we again were given another bottle of water and more food to eat. And we always ate it, because we didn't want to show favorites, and because the fruit in Kenya is the best it is anywhere in the world. The idea that a Kenyan would let a visitor be anything but bursting full is ridiculous. For 2.5 weeks, I was constantly full and was getting sores in my mouth from the beautiful pineapple that they kept gifting to me. I have never been more taken care of when it comes to thirst and hunger. These two impulses, thirst and hunger, are wired inside of us and every living thing. They are the early warning signs of our intricate creation that our bodies are in need of something. We can see that when plants thirst, they slump over and shrivel to conserve the water that's left inside of them. Plants reach for the sun to gain access to their food source. We know animals are more dangerous when they're hungry, and that even a well-fed lion can be docile. When God's creation hungers and thirsts, those become the most important urges to have satisfied. Studies have shown that kids who go a whole weekend with little to no food don't perform as well on Monday as they do on Wednesday after 2 days of school meals. This is because when our bodies hunger and thirst, All other non-essential functions begin to shut down to conserve our energy. We go into survival mode. Our ability to think weakens, our capacity to handle stress diminishes. This is such a phenomenon in our culture that even we have created a new word called hangry. When you hunger and it makes it harder to be kind, and anger takes over. Hunger and thirst are pains from inside us, telling us we need to focus on survival. The things we hunger and thirst for are so vital to our survival that everything else can wait, so that we can focus on meeting the need and living another day. We don't start out knowing how to express these needs or how to get water and food for ourselves. Babies have no clue how to find and prepare food, nor do they truly understand the pains that they're feeling. When a baby is hungry or thirsty, they scream and throw tantrums until those who are tasked to take care of them come to help. Children can ask for food and water a little better, but they still don't fully understand the cause of their hunger and thirst. They suddenly become very hungry or very thirsty. They often need someone else who is more mature to take the lead and notice and say something like, "Do you need a snack?" This outside input begins to teach kids to notice what their body is telling them. And as they grow up, they become better at knowing what it feels like to be hungry and thirsty and can begin to meet those needs for themselves. This understanding improves into adulthood, where we are so in tune with the feeling of hunger and thirst that we can sense the littlest signal of an imbalance. We can feel our mouths getting dry and seek out water before we get into any danger zone. When our heads get light or tiredness sets in, we can consider maybe a snack will help us. Now, just about 100% of us have the privilege of food in our homes and clean water in our taps. So when we hunger or thirst, it's simply a matter of hours before that need is met. But there are many in our world that, for them, these early signals of hunger and thirst set a deadly clock ticking. They may understand this scripture better than we ever will, but even we can appreciate what Jesus is telling us about righteousness. Righteousness is one of those words that we need to understand as Christians because it is all over scripture. It's used over 407 times in the Bible. So we don't want to just skim past this. And the process of learning what a word means can take a few different paths. One is by following the progression of the word backwards through time to its origin, so that we can see in reverse how it has evolved and all the different meanings it's collected and carried back through time. Another important thing to consider is how people use the word in the moment that it was written, or how the person who spoke it would have understood the meaning. For example, our greeting, hi, is so ubiquitous in our language today that we say it without even thinking about what it means. But when I was in Minnesota a few years ago, I got in trouble by using the word hi the way we do here in Michigan. Here, hi is less of an official greeting and more of just an acknowledgement of someone that we see walk by. We can say hi to strangers and just let them keep going. When I was in Minnesota, however, hi would mean, "I want to have a full conversation with you." Everyone is so nice there, at least everybody that I passed by. They were more than willing to stop and talk to me and get to know me simply by me saying hi. Hi is also obviously an origin that we can trace. Hi is from hello, which is actually only 150 years old. In the late 1800s, it was used exclusively as a greeting when you're surprised to see someone or when you need to get someone's attention. It gained popularity when telephones were invented, and we all agreed that that was the best way to pick up a phone and say hello, which was a surprising interaction at the time, so it makes sense. Hello actually grew out of the word hail, which held the meaning of wishing someone wholeness and health. Hail, H-A-I-L, is derived from the word hail, H-A-L-E, which is also the root for health. So we can see how words evolve and relate to one another to add a deeper meaning when we take the time to understand them. When it comes to the word righteousness, Jesus uses the Greek word dikaios, which would have been understood to refer to someone being correct, or by implication, innocent. If someone was dikaios, they were a righteous person, to the point that if someone said they were guilty of something, everyone who knew them would know that that was a lie, because they were at their core always acting and speaking in a correct manner. Jesus' understanding of righteousness was fuller than just simply being a good person, though. He knew the history of the word, especially the way that God uses this word in Scripture. The word dikaios comes from the word decay, which was used specifically for the justice system at the time. It would mean a correct verdict or sentence. Whether the court declared someone guilty or innocent, you could say it was decay. It was the right or self-evident verdict. Or if a sentence of life in prison was given, that sentence could be decay, the right sentence for the crime. When decay is translated into English, we use most often the word justice, the right, self-evident, and correct verdict. But we can go deeper. Decay comes from a Hebrew word, tzedek. Tzedek in the English is translated as righteousness or justice, and the contextual usage of this word in Scripture will help us understand what this word meant to Second Temple Jewish communities, aka what it meant to Jesus. In Levitical law, it's used to denote fairness. When selling goods, you need to have fair scales, tzedek scales. When you negotiate with a neighbor, you're supposed to be tzedek, fair. In Deuteronomy, it's a legal term that a judge makes tzedek decisions. We can see the link to the Greek evolution there. Job constantly asked God, what is right and just? What is tzedek? And calls God out when he sees things that are not tzedek. Psalms exclusively uses this to describe God. God is the one who is truly and always tzedek. And the prophets call God's people back to their original purpose to be tzedek people. Since God is perfectly tzedek and humanity is made in God's image and tasked with enacting God's will in this world, the people are supposed to be righteous, to do justice, to be tzedek. People who put aside their own biases and passions and wants to seek first that which is right and fair and correct in God's eyes. Tzedek is our God-given purpose. That is how Jesus would have understood the word righteousness. It is not just about being good, innocent people. It's a purpose given to us by God and our responsibility to make happen. It's the part of us that we were created to do so much that we yearn for it, like water and food. It is essential to our survival. All other functions fade away as we search for righteousness, for correct verdict and sentence and fair transactions. Just like we hunger and thirst, we have to learn how to notice our pains for righteousness. And we need to learn how to meet those needs. When we're just starting out, our pain for righteousness will cause us to scream and throw tantrums like babies needing food and water. At first, we have no clue how to get righteousness. We just know from inside that we need it. We rely on others, those who have the power to get what we need, who are there to take care of us, to offer us righteousness. We have seen people in our world at this stage of development. They know something is not right. They can feel it from within. Something is not fair or correct according to God. And so they riot and loot and cause destruction. These are the tantrums of people feeling a new yearning from within and not yet able to satisfy the need. Every moment their need for righteousness is not met by those who are supposed to be taking care of them, their screams get louder. Eventually, we get to a stage where we can feel our yearning for righteousness, and instead of tantrums, we can express what we need to those who can help. Riots become protests. Screams become phone calls to those in power, but we're still immature and only take action when we're very hungry. We don't always anticipate the need for a snack. When something unjust happens, our pain quickly intensifies, and we are again seeking a way to satisfy our yearning inside. Eventually, we mature enough to feel the small pains before the overwhelming hunger. We notice the microaggressions when people say things like, "you people." We notice the tone in jokes. We can wonder why an industry hires more men or why a disease is killing more of one community than another. The hunger and thirst for righteousness is so fine-tuned that even the slightest pain can call us into action. We organize for our community to experience righteousness. We say something when we witness unrighteousness. We run for office or take leadership roles in the systems that need to operate with more righteousness. We are all somewhere in this development of understanding our God-given yearning for righteousness. But this beatitude gives us encouragement that we need to continue developing and fine-tuning our sense for righteousness and our ability to meet the need, because those who hunger and thirst will be satisfied. Those who yearn for righteousness like they yearn for food and water will be satisfied. They will be nourished to the point of being full. Be assured, God is making a world where righteousness is handed out like water and fruit in Kenya. It will be given at every stop that we make. Every person we meet will offer us more righteousness. We will be satisfied. It hurts now, I know. But there is wonderful news for those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be satisfied.